Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Christian Fowler, senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. He is on @CFowlerBC, and we also have a podcast that releases every single Tuesday at noon. It's called the On the Bluff Podcast on Apple, Spotify, full-length video version on YouTube. You know the drill. Christian, what's the word? How's it going?
Everything's good, Gabe. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Can I throw out a congratulations? Congratulations to you, Uncle.
Go for it.
Your sister, her husband had their child. So congrats to your family on that. That's great stuff.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. It's been cool. It's been cool so far. It's like the first baby of the family. First time I'm an uncle. So really cool.
How was the experience? I was gonna say that's what I'm saying. We were wondering last week. When you were in studio, if she was going to go into labor at some point, they ended up forcing it. They ended up making her.
They did. They made her go into it, and it finally happened. So it's kind of hard to describe without going into crazy detail, which obviously I won't, because I want to be respectful to her and her husband. But
for sure,
it's very, very, very cool. Very cool experience to be a part of.
Yeah. All right. Now let's get into the cool experiences we've had in Memphis Tiger basketball transfer portal. Kind of a tough transition there.
For a segue.
But Colby Rogers ends up committing, and now it adds to PJ Haggerty, Dane Danger, and now they're looking at other guys out there that we'll talk about in just a second. But this is a good get, a guy who can, just peel it from three. 7.1 attempts per game last year, and he shot 40.7%. Definitely a good scorer. Granted, he comes from Wichita State, so people have their reservations looking at how Jaquan Walton panned out and the fact that Wichita State was not a good team and he was the leading scorer there. People want guys from more better successful programs, I think, is the other reservation that people have. But Colby Rogers is a hell of a player.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there could be a part of you that would be like, okay, I wish they were getting transfers from more higher-end schools. But at the same time, you look around the transfer portal, you look around some of the most successful programs in the country, a lot of these guys do come from lower programs or mid-major programs or low-major programs that have been successful there. So I don't have too many reservations about that. Do I think he'll be a 16, 17-point-per-game scorer at Memphis? No, I don't, because I believe that this class is going to end up being relatively solid. And also with PJ Haggerty, you don't necessarily need someone else that's going to score at that 15 to 20 point per game clip. So I don't necessarily think he's going to be asked to be the leading scorer on this team like he was with Wichita State. And I think the biggest thing you look at, and you mentioned it at the top, is his three-point shooting. And that's something I feel like it's kind of slipped under the cracks a little bit throughout the Penny Hardaway era. There hasn't been a ton of success as a three-point shooting team. There have been certain spikes in that time or certain players who have been successful, but as a whole, Memphis just hasn't been a great three-point shooting team since 2018, at least. So to add that punch early on and to have him that can shoot threes and PJ Haggerty, who we believe can continue to develop from the three-point line. I like the way that he's building it, and obviously, as everybody else, just curious to see where the rest of this class goes.
Yeah, and here's like it's gone two different ways with David Jones. I think some people are saying, okay, he's building around David Jones with PJ Haggerty and Colby Rogers and Dane Danger, having Nick Jourdain come back, that type of thing. And then my thought, to be honest with you, I lean this way a whole lot more. I feel like based on P.J. Haggerty and the amount of scoring he does, and based on Colby Rogers, the three-point ability and the scoring he does, it feels like he is, okay, yeah, sure, if David Jones comes back, you feel really good about the offensive punch he'll bring. But it feels like he's trying to, bring in enough scoring in the event that David Jones doesn't come back, because we're not going to know until May or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah, I completely agree, and I think that's the way you almost have to build it, right? We've talked about this a couple times now. You can't build a team around someone who may or may not be there. You have to build a team as if that person will not be there. So I can pretty confidently say I feel like he's building this team to be its own team, not to be built around David Jones, but to be built around P.J. Haggerty and whoever else is brought in throughout the transfer portal. So I think that is the way he's building it, and I think you described it perfectly. If David Jones ultimately does come back, then great. You have great pieces around him, and you have him and P.J. Haggerty who can be kind of that duo when it comes to being the top scorers, because I don't necessarily think Colby Rogers needs that as much as P.J. Haggerty and David Jones. So either way, I think he's covering all bases, which is exactly what you have to do in this scenario.
Yeah, and I want to ask, you sort of mentioned this a little bit earlier. I mean, Dalton Kinnett came from Northern Colorado. We've had a lot of good players that potentially could go off to the NBA draft that have come from smaller schools because of the transfer portal and how available it is. But, I mean, do you have any reservations about basically getting the Conference US AAC Avengers together? I mean, like, that's what this is. You have the AAC All-Stars that he is putting together. Any guy that had a good showing against Memphis in the past couple of years gets reached out to by Penny Hardaway.
I don't know. I think you can go a lot of ways on this one. I don't hate it because we've seen it work out in the past, obviously. Right. Like, you can't just bring up Jaquan Walton without bringing up Kendrick Davis also. So there's kind of a catch-22 there of it can go either way. It's not about, oh, they were already successful in this conference, so the success is going to translate. Not necessarily. Or they've already been successful in this conference. It just doesn't excite me too much. And that can go the other way when it becomes a player like Kendrick Davis. And I think what we all believe P.J. Haggerty will be as well. So I think it's kind of on a case-by-case basis, and you have to break it down from there. Can you have more reservations about Colby Rogers than P.J. Haggerty? Yes, you can, in my opinion, just because that Wichita State team was pretty miserable. Not that Tulsa was great, but you just see more of an upside from P.J. Haggerty. But I do think both can translate to Memphis and have success at Memphis in a conference that they have had success at. So I understand people want you to go get, you know, a player coming from a top-tier school that's a top-five transfer. But that's not always the case and not always the formula to building a winning program. And there is no formula, you know. I mean, sometimes you hit and sometimes you miss. And it's one of those things that, you know, you can break down, you can talk about, you can have reservations about, you can have things that you're positive about. But at the end of the day, you really don't have any clue how it's going to translate until you actually see it on the floor. Like, there aren't many people that would have said Jaquan Walton wouldn't have had a great year this year. After you look at what he did at Wichita State, you could have made the same argument, right? It wasn't a very successful team. He was the leading scorer on that team. But his efficiency made you feel like it's gonna translate. And ultimately, it didn't work out as well as most people expected. So there's no rhyme or reason. There's no formula to it. It's just, you know, you get good players that are proven against the same level of competition that you play against, and you roll the dice and you see how it works out.
Yeah, and to be fair, like, the Colby Rogers 3-point efficiency is a lot different than Jaquan Walton's. Jaquan Walton did it on 2.5 attempts per game. Colby Rogers has been with us for 4 years, where he's either averaged, I think the lowest amount of threes he's averaged attempting per game is like 4, and he had 7 last year at 40%.
Yeah. And I wasn't referencing Jaquan Walton as a 3-point shooter. I just meant his overall.
Right. No. I get what you mean. I completely get what you mean. But that's definitely been sort of a narrative that some people are trying to create around it.
Right. But no, you're talking about a guy that averaged shooting 7 threes a game. That is completely different. It's a high volume shooter that also shoots well from that range. And I know I said it at the top, but I'll mention it again. Like, they're just, I think of an elite shooter that's been at Memphis under Penny Hardaway.
Right.
Nothing comes
that's
to
some,
mind.
Well, there's some guys that you like. Lester Quinones was supposed to be a 3-point knockdown guy.
Supposed to be.
Right.
But it never really showed that much at Memphis.
Let me run this by you, though. Is that a shot against the guys themselves, or is that a shot against sort of the offense that's being run? Because one thing that I do notice about this offense, and I think down the stretch of last season, you saw more actions and more pin downs and, you know, drag screens to try to get some shooters open. But that's not something that Penny usually does, right? It's usually drive and kick, use the gravity of whoever's at point guard or whoever your scoring threat is, use the gravity from him to kick out and knock down a three. I think with if he's going to surround P.J. Haggerty and potentially David Jones with some shooters, there probably needs to be more off-ball movement. I look at a guy like Mark Pope, who just obviously got hired at Kentucky. He does that better than just about everybody in the country, where you have a bunch of off-ball movement and you're scheming your shooters open. Maybe that's something Penny needs to get into.
Exactly. That's exactly the point that I was about to make. You have to decide whether you want to scheme guys open off-ball or whether you want to use more, like you said, pin downs and high screens to be able to allow those guys to move around, or if you just basically say, if you are not a catch and shoot 3-point shooter, then you're probably not going to be that successful here. Because that's really what it's been like from 3-point range for this team a lot of over the past several years is you have to be successful catch and shoot.
Yes.
Or at creation. So there's not a lot of off ball movement. There's not a lot of guys moving around that area, whether it be screens or, you know, any other action around there. So it just depends. Does he decide this year, okay, we're going to scheme that open a little bit more because we have such a successful shooter right now, and we'll see what else they add? Or is it kind of, look, if you're not successful at that catch and shoot three, then you're probably just not going to be as good of a 3-point shooter here.
Yeah. Now I know there's a lot of people hyped up about last year's class because of the amount of talent and the amount of points they scored and their history. And you had some former five stars, McDonald's All-Americans, and Javon Quinterly and Jordan Brown last year. Like, people were hyped up about that recruiting class. But this year, are you a lot more convinced with the plan than you were a year ago? I know that, like, at the time, and obviously, like, hindsight's big here. At the time, we were, you know, just looking at it, and you're like, oh, you just have all this talent. This should work out. Obviously, it didn't. But this year, it feels like 3-point shooting, defense are the things he's focusing on, and that makes more sense with the scheme that he tries to run game to game.
Yeah, definitely. I feel more confident because when you look at the class from last year, was it extremely impressive on paper?
Sure.
Absolutely. It was absolutely impressive. Javon Quinterly, Jaquan Walton, Jordan Brown, all these players that had success at other stops. So on paper, it made sense. But then you realize when you look back now with hindsight being 2020, a lot of these guys would not be considered defensive players, would not be what you first think of them when you see them, or even defensive-minded players, you know, not really guys that were, I don't want to say acceptable because that feels harsh, but they just weren't maybe proficient. They weren't proficient defensively. And I feel like we see this year building more towards that, more towards guys that fit the system and the speed outside of maybe Dane Danger, but that we've already talked about that. That's kind of right. A wait and see on what he does, you know, with his weight. Does he drop down more? How does Penny use him? Is he a, you know, a 10 to 12 minute a guy game that's kind of more of your down low enforcer, or is he someone that kind of fits into the long-term plan that you need him to lose that weight and be able to move more? We'll see with that. But on the other additions, you feel like, okay, these actually make sense. No, they're not as splashy as Javon Quinterly and Jordan Brown necessarily, but they make more sense. And at the end of the day, P.J. Haggerty has more upside than either one of those guys ever did because they didn't have the eligibility to make a long-standing run with this school. And with P.J. Haggerty, you have that. So I know maybe the name value, because Javon Quinterly has been known for so long, Jordan Brown, the success that he had previous to coming to Memphis, like, yes, they were headline grabbers, but P.J. Haggerty fits better and has more of an opportunity to make a lasting impact at Memphis than either one of those players did.
Now, what's the next domino you want to fall? I know Aaron Scott's making his visit to St. John's this week, and he made his visit last week to the University of Memphis. Is that the next guy you want to see sort of fall? A big wing, 6'7", two-way guy, shoots the three relatively well, 37% last year.
Yeah, it's hard for me not to go there, and I know there may be backlash from that because, just as we said, it's the, what did you call it, the AAC of injury?
Yeah.
So it stays in that realm, but it's hard to look at how this roster is being constructed. You've got your guards now, presumably. You've got a couple of bigs and Nick Jordan and Dane Danger, and go, man, what else fits into this puzzle that is an immediate right now you want to see. And it's hard not to say long, athletic wing that can shoot, that is relatively versatile offensively and has the upside to be very, very successful defensively because of what he can do getting into passing lanes and in transition. So we talked about Aaron Scott last week. I'm a big fan of his game. I know it's not splashy. I know it's North Texas, and it's not coming from, you know, North Carolina or Duke or one of these top schools, or it's not a former five-star, but it fits the system, it makes sense, and it's a quality player. So it's hard for me not to say Aaron Scott would be at the top of my priority list at this point.
And it's reminding me more of 2 years ago on the transfer portal than last year. It's just it's definitely a breath of fresh air. It's not going after every shiny object, every guy in the transfer portal rankings at On3 or 247. It's finding guys that fit, and that's definitely a welcome change. Now, also, one thing that I am noticing, like we talked about defense and three-point shooting, he is trying to, like, he's reached out to a couple of guys that are from Memphis. Sam Houston State transfer Devon Barnes, played for Collierville his senior year. Also, Morehead State transfer Mark Freeman, he's a guard. He went to Southwind, and he was the OVC player of the year 22-23, didn't play last year. It looks like he's, all those conversations he's had, whether it be on his radio show or with the press after games, that type of thing, where he says, I want guys to play for the city. It looks like he's trying to aim to do that at least a tad bit as well.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see on that, because it hasn't been something that he's really done since his first year and getting...
When you brought all the East guys and Tyler Harris and everybody else.
Right. It just hasn't really been that way since. And you can make an argument that there hasn't been a ton of high-level talent in the city since then. But it's on the same in the same breath, you can say, well, look at what Cam Jones just did. And he wasn't the most highly rated guy, but it was clear that he had talent. And then what he ended up going and doing at Marquette speaks for itself. But I think for Memphis fans and for people in the city of Memphis, they always want that. They always want to be able to cheer on guys that they've been watching. Because you hear people say that all the time about Alex Lomax and Tyler Harris and Malcolm Dandridge. I've been watching him since he was in elementary school or middle school. And people love having that feeling of connection to a player, and then also the pride of, you know, someone that is from the city and played in the city, grew up in the city, is now playing for the team. So I know that can kind of sound maybe goofy to some people, of like, it shouldn't matter about that. It should matter about the best quality of players, and of course that should be the top priority, but there's never anything wrong with having, you know, homegrown talent, because it just gives people a deeper connection to the team and to the program.
Well, but here's the thing that I will say is, I think more so than anything, it's about culture and buy-in, because you don't necessarily have to have a guy from Memphis to put the city on his back, right? I mean, we watched DeAndre Williams and Kendrick Davis do it at the highest of levels and play for the city and latch themselves onto the city, and all the fans love them. They're both from Texas. You know what I mean? So, like, it's just it doesn't necessarily have to be somebody from the city. I guess it helps, but as long as you have those cultural pillars, those non-negotiables, the understanding of what this city is, it's fine. If you're from somewhere else, it shouldn't matter.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, if you're not, you know, from Memphis, if it's not your hometown, then that love that you show to the city, who I think you mentioned the two players that have done it the best under Penny Hardaway, in DeAndre Williams and Kendrick Davis, if you give that, then you're treated like you're from Memphis anyway. So you're absolutely right. It doesn't have to be homegrown talent, and if you're not, but you embrace the city like it's your own and you treat it like, you know, home away from home and second hometown, then that allows people to feel the same way about you as if you were actually from the city. And we've seen that. And we've seen guys that haven't embraced the city, and they haven't necessarily gotten the same amount of fanfare because it was just it was just checking off a box, or, you know, the next place before the next place. And with some guys, that's not the case. It never felt like that with Kendrick. Even though there were NBA aspirations, even though it was only 1 year, it never felt like, I'm just checking the box, I'm just coming here as a stepping stone. It felt like, no, I'm endearing myself to this place, and I love this place.
No question.
And that gives a completely different feeling for the fans about that player. They feel like, it's almost like you feel like you're a part of that player's life, or like an extension of the family or something like that for some people. And so you're right. You don't have to be from here as long as you embrace the city and show love to the city.
Yeah.
But if you don't put any of that in, then you don't.
And we saw a lot of that last year.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't reach that upper echelon of fanfare at Memphis that you could if otherwise.
Talking with Christian Fowler at C. Fowler BCM. Now on to Tiger football. We have the spring game coming up on Saturday. I don't buy into spring games all that much. I don't think you do either. But what are you expecting to see?
I don't really know. I don't really know.
I'm with you, man. I'm with you.
And that's the thing. Obviously, I used to be in a position where I was at every practice and every press conference and all these things, and got more of a sense of what was going on. And that's just not my role anymore with what I'm currently doing. But the things that I'm at least excited to see, it's hard for me to go at the top of the list not saying Mario Anderson.
Yes.
Like, I'm
running back room in general, too.
Exactly. Just overall running back room. But Mario Anderson being the new addition to this backfield, what he was able to do at South Carolina last year, what I genuinely believe he'll be able to do to the conference this year. I think he could, I don't want to say very easily, but I think he could definitely be the top running back in the conference this year. It wouldn't surprise me in the least. So excited to see what he does kind of in his first showcase at Memphis. And then just overall, always, I think for me and you, offensive line, the shuffle that they do there, who's on which team, because we know it's not by starters, it's kind of just broken up. So, which 10 offensive linemen are out there first and who looks the best out of those players. And you kind of get a little bit of an idea for the shuffle there. So that's always fun to watch, I think, for both of us. And then just defensively, overall, really want to see this linebacker core. I think it's going to be one of the best in the conference this year.
Yep.
And then just overall defensively, do they look faster like we expect them to look? Do they look stronger like we expect them to look? Because I think with some of the guys that they brought in on all three levels of the defense, I think we're all expecting, more size, more strength, more speed. And you definitely can get an idea about that this time of year. So just off the top of my head, those are the three things I'm at least excited to see. I want to see what Mario Anderson looks like against this level of competition. I want to see who stands out on the offensive line, and then just the overall speed of the defense and some of the transfers they were able to bring in on the D-line, the linebacker room, and in the secondary.
I want to see the secondary. I'm curious about that. And if you didn't know, it opened today, the transfer portal. It'll close on April 30th, the spring window. Diego Brumfield ended up getting in today. He was a starter for Memphis last year out of Campbellsville. It was kind of cool to see that he was able. It was D2 going to D1, and he ended up starting, and he led the team in pass breakups. But we know that defensive backfield was not very good last year. How do you read that, right? Like, there's a couple of ways to read it. Maybe he has an offer to go somewhere else, bigger, but I don't necessarily know if I believe that. Maybe it has to do with bringing in different guys. They brought in Taj Rael from Old Dominion this past offseason. They have some guys that they've been cooking for a while, that have been on campus for a while, that maybe have passed them in the pecking order. Maybe that's what this is. But Diego Brumfield in the transfer portal, is that how do you feel about that?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question on that, right? Because it goes either way. Is someone else, maybe tampering, reaching out a little bit, showing some interest, and he feels like that's a better option for him, or is it?
And I would imagine we'll learn soon, by the way, depending on where he commits to. Right?
Right. No. Yeah. No. You're absolutely right. So to me, just breaking that down, to me, what it looks like, totally opinion, not anything crazy into it. Memphis brought in a ton of talent in the defensive backfield, guys that were, relatively high ranked. I think two of their four highest ranked defensive backs or guys they brought in the class, in the transfer class, were defensive backs. So to me, it kind of says to me that that maybe he knew that the playing time wasn't going to be as much this year and that there was more competition. And not necessarily that he's running from competition, but just, okay, if I want to continue to be on the field and to make a name for myself and to be able to have success, then maybe I do need to go elsewhere, because some of these guys that came in are really competing and showing out.
Yeah. Now, I people will call me a homer when I bring this stuff up and I discuss it. Just, I wouldn't say it if I didn't believe it. But when you look at that program right now and the way they're operating, Like, is there any bad words to say about it? I mean, you lose Lou Esposito, who people were very frustrated about. It felt like you fell up by hiring Spence Nowinski from Ohio, who was the defensive coordinator who led the best group of five defense last year, a year ago, in his 1 year as the defensive coordinator. You sort of fell up there. They have a GM. They've done good on the transfer portal. They haven't had a bunch of transfers leave thus far. We'll see how it works before April 30th. But like I keep trying to tell people, like, when you look at how they're operating on a different level. They're operating at a Power 5 level. Ryan seems to be holding up his end of the bargain to try to get them into that next stratosphere as a program. I mean, do you agree with that, or is that overstated?
No, I genuinely think you're right, and I do agree with you. And you didn't even mention the stadium renovation.
Right, stadium renovation as well.
Another thing about this program that is on the upswing. So overall,
and the NIL money seems to be heading in the right direction as well.
Right, that as well. So it's like you really can't poke too many holes in this program right now. I don't know where you really can. Maybe you can get very in the weeds on, you know, specific positions or specific players and the questions there. But overall, as a program, we both believe they'll have success on the field this year. The amount of successful coaches that are on this staff is pretty impressive, and the staff that Ryan's been able to build. But overall, stadium renovations, NIL, like, you go down the checklist, and it does look really impressive. And it's kind of been night and day from where we were last year. Not that the program was being ran the wrong way or anything like that. I'm just talking about the sentiment from the outside.
Right.
Was that Memphis was on the downswing. The conference had just changed over. Fans weren't excited about the previous two seasons with Ryan and the success that the team had had. And it just, you know, you just missed out on conference realignment stuff. Stadium renovations were kind of in flux and an unknown. And you fast forward a year later, and I think everything's in a much, much better position, about as much positivity as you can gain in a year without too much happening other than winning 10 games in that span. So I think we're seeing it, we're feeling it on social media with the way that fans are talking about this season. It just feels like a different aura around the program going into this year than it did last year.
Yeah, now, final thing, and this is a transition to your Cowboys in the NFL. Talking with Christian Fowler at C. Fowler BCM. What the hell are they doing? Like, what are they doing? I saw the latest update here is CeeDee Lamb has not gotten his contract extension. He's not going to show up to voluntary workouts and OTAs, which I don't really care about that. As long as he shows up to a training camp, that's all you really care about. But the fact that they are putting that into a little bit of a question, considering they haven't gotten this contract extension done, I don't get it. I mean, he's going to be 25 next year, and he caught for 1,700 yards. He was a first-team All-Pro guy. I mean, to pay him, right? Just like you have to accept, I'm going to pay him $30-plus million a year, and then you call it a day. It could be a 3-year contract, 5-year contract. There's going to be some negotiating behind the scenes. But it seems like that's the type of guy in a win-now moment where you just have to keep him happy. You do.
Yeah, I can't give you any answers because I have no clue. It makes no sense to me.
Crazy,
they've had a terrible off season, and now the quote unquote whole reason they had a terrible off season as far as free agent signings go is so they can, you know, keep their own, so they can sign Micah Parsons and CeeDee Lamb and some of their other up and coming players. And where's that at? You know, we're talking about OTAs and CeeDee Lamb not showing up, and it's like, okay, if this is the whole reason that you're not signing free agents, that you're not making any moves, then shouldn't that be pretty far up the priority list to go ahead and take care of that? So I don't know. You're starting to hear whispers now about, you know, Dallas being a dark horse team to draft a quarterback, and you've even got, you know, there's not any smoke to it, but rumors at least of Cowboys are going to try to trade Dak Prescott at the draft and try to rebuild, try to basically do
ridiculous
what the Houston Texans,
ridiculous
what the Houston
rumors,
Texans
though.
Did. And it's like that doesn't make any sense. That's insane. So I don't know what the end goal is. I think we'll have a little bit more clarity next Thursday during the draft, or, you know, over next weekend, Thursday through Saturday, and just seeing the direction that they go with those picks. Maybe, in my opinion, if you don't get at least one starting caliber offensive lineman and one starting caliber running back, then you're totally missing out on exactly what this team needs. Because at the end of the day, they probably need a linebacker. They definitely need a running back. They need at least, but probably two offensive linemen with Tyler Biadasz and Tyron Smith gone. And so there are, in this team that won 12 games last year, there are many more holes that weren't present last year. I mean, maybe the Cowboys didn't have the best offensive line in the league, but there weren't any question marks. You knew what you had. You knew you had a really talented group, and then you had some question marks with Tyler Biadasz and Terrence Steele coming off the ACL. It was like, okay, they're going to be solid, but they're not going to be great. Now this year, you have two openings on your offensive line. There are talks about potentially moving your all-pro guard to tackle, which I know may have been the plan from the beginning, but if someone's an all-pro at a position, leave them there. you know, leave them at the position that they're an all-pro at. Don't mess with that.
Yeah.
So it's been a bad offseason. That doesn't make any sense. The only way I think they can really rectify it is if they get maybe three viable, solid starters.
But is that the only explanation? Is that the only explanation? Is that they're cocky and kind of arrogant about what they can get done in the draft?
Maybe.
Because they have been a good drafting team. Like, that's one thing I won't take away from them. They've been a good drafting team.
Yeah, but it only takes one. Just like last year, they completely whiffed. They got no starters from that draft, and they're feeling the effects of it now.
Yeah.
They're feeling that they weren't able to get any valuable players in that draft. And, you know, the jump from one to two is huge, so you'll see what Mozzie Smith is. I don't think Luke Schoonmaker will be a starter, because I think Jake Ferguson's a really, really solid tight end. So, and that was the first two picks they had last year. So I think they whiffed last year, and they're feeling that this year with their depth, because they just didn't have much. And now when you have free agents walk, it shows up.
Yes, sir. I hear you. Well, Christian, I appreciate it, man. We'll do it again next week.
All right, appreciate it. See y'all next week.
Yes, sir. That is Christian Fowler at C Fowler BCM. He is a senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media.